podcast, where we will present short, digestible segments clipped from the Active Inference Lab weekly live streams. If you like what you hear and you want to learn more, check out the entire live stream at the Active Inference Lab YouTube channel. The link to the live stream is provided in the episode description. My name is Blue Knight, and I will be guiding you through this podcast episode, which is clipped from ACTINF Lab live stream number 9.1. This discussion will be loosely structured around the paper, The Projective Consciousness Model and Phenomenal Selfhood, by Kenneth Williford, Daniel Benekin, Carl Friston, and David Rudroff. Daniel Friedman is going to start off the discussion with some questions about consciousness.
The first question is, what interests you about studying consciousness? And the second question is, what are some ways that we can study consciousness? Maybe someone's a skeptic, maybe they don't think that we can study consciousness, or maybe they have a really awesome idea about how we could do that. So Lee, go ahead. What's your first thought?
Hi, I'm Lee. I'm in London. I primarily come from the phenomenological angle, and particularly kind of neurophenomenology, really. And what I'm really interested in is agency. So can the models that come out of neuroscience, can they help us to increase our agency? So, for example, if you can become reflexively aware of simulations, modal simulations that are going on in your system, then do those become affordances for actions that we can take? And so you increase the scope of agency. So that's kind of what really interests me about this.
Cool, thanks. Shannon?
I love that you bring up agency right off the bat. I'm Shannon. I would be in California normally, but I'm in South Dakota. Something that's really interesting for me about consciousness, which I don't study at all, is when we lose our sense of agency, like when we're in flow states, if we're making music, or I guess people get in flow states if they really like exercising, and we're completely immersed in the experience, but not consciously aware, or we don't have the same kind of intentionality that we do as if maybe we're like writing down a math problem or trying to speak over a live stream and thinking very carefully about each of our words. And I guess just the phenomenal quality of those two types of experience is really interesting to me.
I agree. And it's part of this, what is consciousness question, and what is the role of awareness? So when we're really paying attention to doing a task with our hands, when we're really paying attention to balancing on a beam or something like that, are we truly at our most self-aware at that moment? Or are we at our least self-aware? Or in which ways are we self-aware? We're not thinking about our biographical history per se, but in another sense, we're the most embodied and an active sort of circuit for action. So where is that going to fit in with active inference and with this idea that we are embodied in an environment? So what is, really more experiential of the self? Doing something that might take up your whole body or bring your full attention to bear, or doing something that asks you to write a personal statement, something like an autobiographical or narrative self. What is another theory or framework for consciousness that you know of or have heard about? Doesn't need to be your theory to support or deny here. Just like, what is something else that is in the space of this paper? And then what's just something that you liked about it or found absent from that model? So I'll just start with something that I find missing from a lot of models, and I really want to know where agency and where a lot of other topics fit into play here. Is it's often a little unclear whether consciousness is something that reaches back into the system and intervenes, or whether it's something that's just purely epiphenomenal, or kind of just there can be awareness, but awareness may not have causal power. So is consciousness something that's just getting spun off to the side and produced, but not reaching back into the system? Or is it something that's actually essential, potentially even in an evolutionary or adaptive context, for maintaining coherent behavior? Stephen?
Hello, I'm Stephen. I'm in Toronto in Canada.
Yeah, I'm interested in this question of self-consciousness that seems to be, and I like just the idea of general consciousness being thought about, because I think in psychology, this idea of the self and the idea of the individual has become so dominant, and the idea of broader consciousness was kind of left 100 years ago for the philosophers to deal with. So this idea of I have a self and I have this idea of a psychology and this perspective on the psychology has become kind of all-encompassing, but now this ability to bring consciousness in more broadly sort of dissolves a lot of those problems, because it kind of stuck psychology at this single scale of analysis. So that's one of the things I think that is quite exciting by all of this.
Cool. Sasha?
Hi, my name is Sasha. I'm also in California.
One thing that I find missing, I feel like a broken record sometimes, is the developmental side of consciousness. And even if we're thinking about humans, you know, our favorite species, how does consciousness develop across a lifetime? And what are the different stages or versions of consciousness that we pass through? And is there a sort of a developmental trajectory? Because I tend to think it's not like flipping a light switch. Like, it's not that we are born and we're immediately plugged into this same consciousness that we're experiencing today. So that's kind of what I would like to see from a consciousness model, is different levels or versions of it that we can start to describe, like much like the flow state or sleep.
Cool. Shannon?
Yeah, I like both of those points that Stephen and Sasha brought up. And not just how does our personal consciousness develop over time, but how does our consciousness, like our group consciousness, develop? So like as an infant, a lot of your conscious experience is really coupled with the mother or the caregiver. And like slowly you might develop a sense of yourself as an individual separate from that caregiver. But also when we gather in groups, you know, when we gather at concerts or we gather at protests or in events where we're a mix of explicitly or implicitly interacting with each other, we start to behave like one group. And in some sense, we start to really feel like one group rather than like just myself in a room full of other people.
Yep. Cool. And it's something in the ant literature people have wondered about: is the nestmate conscious, is just the colony conscious but not the nestmate? Then what is really happening with this transition from individual to group and the development of that? Also interesting, the formation of group. Is it kind of like how many sand grains make a heap? You know, once there's three people, it's a collective consciousness, or do they have to be doing contact improv, or do they have to be rhythmically synchronized? What are those dynamics? What might be metrics? What might be things that we could come to the table and agree on as far as measurements are concerned, so that we could kind of move the needle forward in research? Or is this a question that, because of its maybe fundamental difficulty in measurement, is it a question that's sort of forever going to be in the speculative domain? I think that the authors of this paper would suggest that scientific study of consciousness is meritorious, and that there's value in approaching with even a mathematical bent, approaching how we could study consciousness, though it's by no means obvious that mathematics is the way that we're going to express the language or the structure of consciousness, especially when we start to think about all these different dimensions like group versus individual, and what, you know, who is individual? We were never individuals, that type of thinking. What does the brain region know that the neuron doesn't, and the brain know that the region doesn't? All these questions are going to come into play, and a lot of the neuro and social parts are going to get a little bit not swept under the rug here, but this paper is clearly a little bit more on the cut and dry projective geometry side. And there's a lot of discussion of neurophenomenology, but you don't see any pictures of cells, you don't see any actual details of neuromechanisms. It's just assumed, well, you could wrap mechanisms and mechanisms kind of close to the end to get this type of a system's behavior. And so we'll get a little bit more into it.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Stay tuned for next time, where we will have additional discussions about this paper and different perspectives of consciousness.